in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 644. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by telephone by my famous co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do every other Wednesday at koop.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry. Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Feed me.
Does it have to be human?
Feed me.
Does it have to be mine?
Feed me.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long. That's right, boy. You can do it. Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long. 'Cause if you feed me, Seymour, I can grow big and strong.
It is Wednesday, November 24th, 2021, the day before Thanksgiving or the Fall Festival, whatever you want to call it. On the show today, we have our very, very dear friends, and I mean this, at Ground Floor Theater and their show, Unexpected Joy. And of course, Nicole and I will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Albuquerque, and Tuna, Texas. Stick with us. You're gonna get it, Nicole.
I'm your genie. I'm your man. Oh my gosh, that made me really excited. I was jamming out. And Kim Simpson was on fire today.
He was Turkey Day playing turkey songs.
International Folk Bazaar. I love turkey.
More like International Great Bazaar.
Turkey is an interesting place.
It is. I haven't been there. But I do know I had a friend that is from the Great Britain, and most people, or at least at this time, this was in the 70s and 80s, or the 80s, big vacation spot for Europeans.
Very big vacation spot for Europeans. Same with Beirut, another one that was a big spot. My mom used to love going there.
Yeah, not in my adult days. You didn't go to Beirut.
But the beaches were absolutely beautiful. There's some of the most beautiful beaches she's ever seen in the world is in Beirut.
Well, there you go. So today is Wednesday, the day
World International Day with Nicole and Lisa.
Yes. It is the day before the Autumn Festival. Trying not to celebrate Thanksgiving, being that politically correct left-wing snowflake that I am.
Okay.
There you go, Indigenous Peoples Day. Do you have festive plans for the holiday?
I mean, it's kind of the same jam I always do.
You have jam for Thanksgiving? That seems odd.
No, I don't. But no, that wouldn't seem odd. There would be people that would eat jam with their biscuits.
I was making
a
joke, silly.
Oh,
I was making a joke. All right. Well, that went over like a big tub of jam.
I love food, Lisa.
Yeah. So,
food, and I really was like jam.
Yep. I must say that I have two favorite holidays in the world, and one is Thanksgiving, and the other is Passover, because they're basically the same thing. Let's eat.
I'm all for it.
Let's eat. We had three Broadway openings this week.
Tell us about them.
Call it Trace. So last Wednesday, a week ago today, Diana the Musical opened. And I think I had mentioned this on the air. You know, they shot it for Netflix, and I saw the Netflix production.
You did watch it, yes.
Or at least
you didn't get through the whole thing, though.
No, I didn't. Very good memory,
right.
And for good reason, because it, in my professional opinion, and this is, I realize, and this is jargon that may go over other people's head, it was no good.
I really don't have anything else to say. I don't know what to say to that. I mean,
and I do have to say, the critics agreed with me. Of the 17, did they like it? Critics, 14 said no good, 2 liked it, and 1 was mixed. Our friend,
interesting.
I know. I don't know. I could say it could be mixed. So one of the things about this, this is a really bad musical, and Jesse Green likened it.
I mean, I don't want to be mean to anyone, but let's just say it. It was a bad idea.
It was a bad idea.
Like Diana into a musical. I could see a play. I honestly could see a play with some tension and some cool stuff, but I don't know.
Well, and yet the Diana story is so ubiquitous. There's so many different things out there.
I know.
Let's see.
I didn't say it needed to be told. I was just saying I could see it more one way than the other if we had to tell it.
Yep. But one of the things, some of the stuff I've been hearing is like, if they had gone, I think if they had gone totally serious, well, they did go totally serious, but if they tried to make it.
Wasn't it serious? How do you make Diana the musical lighthearted?
But if they had done it camp, that might have, survived. Anyway, Jesse Green, the New York Times, said, digging deep into the celebrity biomusical barrel, there to squabble for preeminence with pop divas and Jersey Boys, it may well win the prize as the tawdriest and least excusable wholesaling of a supposedly true story ever to belt its way to Broadway. And then he goes on from there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does not get any better. But they did one. this one was kind of worthy of camp. There was a battle between Diana and Camilla, and they call it in one of the, I think is a lyric. It says, it's the thriller in Manila, but with Diana and Camilla.
I don't know what to say.
So this damn thing was directed by Christopher Ashley. And it just, I just think it missed the mark on so many levels. Then one other thing that Jesse Green says, he said, if you care about Diana as a human being or dignity as a concept, you'll find this treatment of her life both aesthetically and morally mortifying. Right. So I watched as much as I could. I wasn't crazy yet. It starred Jenna DeWall as Diana, and had Judy Kay as the queen, who I think I told you that I kept saying, who is this familiar person? But she was written one dimensional and played one dimensional. Prince Charles was played by a man named, in his Broadway debut, Roe Hartranft. And Camilla.
Say that 5 times quickly.
I know, not easy. And Camilla was played by Aaron Davey. It had 25 previews, and as of November 21st, it had run 4 or 5 performances so far. It'll be interesting to see what happens this one, because they certainly sunk a lot of money into it.
Yeah, they did. Well,
because it's been around. And
I don't know. People like to think the royals sell, but I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Other critics, Charles Isherwood for Broadway News said, is Diana so bad that it simply must be seen? The playbill kept for scene for future display? Is Diana the Carrie de Noisure? The answer is both is a qualified yes, which I don't often disagree with Charles Isherwood, but I disagree with Charles Isherwood on that one.
Yeah, I do.
Do you have any desire to see this? Would you see it in New York if you had nothing else to do? Didn't want to
if
see
I had
anything else
to do, and someone handed me tickets, I'd be like, "Yeah, why not?"
Okay, good for you.
Not me. I'd have to say no.
But, you know, it's not at the top of my list. I wouldn't go out of my way.
I would have to say no. And, of course, we talked about William Ivy Long and the costumer. Oh, I need to see. So one of Jesse Green mentioned, I thought they replaced William Ivy Long, but he mentioned him as the costume designer in the review. So I'm going to look at the IBDB page and see what it says.
Well, they were fraught. Remember, we discussed.
No, I thought they fired him, but he mentioned his costumes as in the show. But no, costume design is credited for Amanda Newman, Catherine Bailey, and Amber Paul. You know Amber Paul, Mr. and Mrs. Paul's kid, the fish stick people.
Ah, that was good.
I know they're good. We had on the 18th, I don't know what day that was, another opening, Trouble in Mind, which got raves from 10 out of the 15. Did they like it? And five split mixed. I say mixed. It's like middle of the road. And this is the show that opened in Off-Broadway 1955. We talked about this a few weeks ago. It was written by Alice Childress, and it was set to go to Broadway, but they wanted to soften it up and make changes to the ending, which she refused to do, thankfully. So it did not. So they did not send it to Broadway. Would have been the first Black female playwright to open on Broadway, but that that distinction went to Raisin in the Sun, I think, 5 years later. But this is a meta show about a show within a show about racism, identity, and ego in New York theater.
Race and showbiz, baby.
Say what?
Race and showbiz.
Race and showbiz, yep. So, oddly enough, New York Times, Jesse Green again. So he loved it. This is a Roundabout Theater Company production playing at the American Airlines Theater. And it was directed by Charles Randolph Wright.
It stars one LaChance, who I just...
It has LaChance, and it has... what's his name? Cephas Jones. God, I just lost his first name.
Oh, my gosh. No, that's
Ron Cephas Jones.
There you go.
And, yes, it's great. And LaChance, who's normally known as a musical performer... got standout notices for her performance in this, which is not a musical, although I believe she does do a little bit of singing in it.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised. I mean, she blew me away in The Color Purple, and
mm-hmm.
I was like, there's way more to her than just the singing. Yeah.
So it's about a show within a show that is called Chaos in Belleville, and it stars Black artists are black actors and white actors, and it shows the power differential of what's going on in this show within a show, whereas the white actors have a lot of agency that doesn't equal the status, like the white intern has more power over the show than the Black actors do, who are actually running it. And the Black actors tend to play just very stereotypical, two-dimensional characters. And this basically shines a light on that. And it looks amazing. I would love to see it.
Yeah, it looks all the images I've seen, everything I've seen about it. I watched a cool little piece on the news.
So it also
you can watch all the local news for up there, and I like doing that.
Other than LaChance, it stars Chuck Cooper.
I was like, Chuck Cooper, Mister. He's got a Tony. I don't remember what for, but I know he's a Tony winner.
Michael Ziegen, Danielle Campbell, who's making her Broadway debut, as well as Jessica Frances Dukes making their Broadway debut.
Oh, she's in one of the great shots I like.
Awesome, that's
Jessica
good to know.
Frances Dukes, mm-hmm.
And Brandon Michael Hall, amongst others.
Excellent.
So Looks amazing. And you know, when I said Ron Cephas Jones, I'm sorry, that's in the next show we're going to talk about. He's not in this one.
I swear I was all like, okay.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I knew Ron was his first name, but I was all
don't believe everything I say. That's the
so
big.
I have to tell you, I have to keep like redoing every time I see Trouble in Mind. I almost want to say Trouble on My Mind and be get all superstar. And I'm like very two different things, Nicole.
There you go. Well, thank you for sharing that. That was an important detail that we needed to hear. Teasing. Anyway, it is playing through January 9th at the American Airlines Theater. I am an Admirals Club member and a million miler on American, so they would just let me in for free.
There you go. They named that theater really for you, but they didn't want the rest of the world to feel bad.
They did. Finally, the last thing that that opened, which just opened last night, is The Clydes by Lynn Nottage. Of the 17 critics from Did They Like It? You want to guess how many liked it and how many? I'll tell you this. None of them didn't like it.
But I'm going to tell you this. It's another production that includes food.
Right. And Ron Cephas Jones, by the way.
And Ron Cephas Jones. But more food. A lot of sandwiches.
So this is written, as I said, by two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Lynn Nottage. The director is Kate Warinsky, who did Ruined and Sweat. And it even has a little, it's got one of the characters from Sweat makes an appearance in this show as well.
Yeah.
I didn't say 16 out of 17 thumbs up for this. So it
That's
looks amazing.
A lot of thumbs.
And Lynn Nottage, who is not known for her comedy, wrote this, and it is a comedy, and it's kind of funny from what I hear.
Well, I mean,
yep. So
we can all be funny. We have different moments.
That was not a criticism, so don't take it as one.
And if I remember correctly, Sweat, Lynn Nottage did at the Alley a season or two ago.
Okay. Good.
Just
yeah, I think Sweat's being done in a lot of places.
No, but I'm saying I think that's where they started, and she workshopped and did everything.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
The character was in this. I was just tying it all.
Yeah, there you go. That's very good news. Jesse Green says, quote, though it's still about dark things, including prison, drugs, homelessness, and poverty, it somehow turns them into a bright comedy. In Kate Warinsky's brisk and thoroughly satisfying production for the Second Stage Theater, we learn that unlike Oedipus and his mom, people who may have little else nevertheless have choices. And it talks about, it's a diner called Clyde's. Interestingly enough, it used to be called Floyd's, and they changed the name after the death, the murder of George Floyd. This stars Uzo Aduba and Ron Cephas Jones, among other. And Uzo Aduba got major, major, major points with this.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's another one that looks really good. When you
really
the
good.
Photos are really just, they pop. They're just so cool.
Yep.
They make you, they tell so much, they make you want to like get inside and learn more.
Yep. Jesse Green said, Aduba's hilarious and scalding performance, Clyde, she plays Clyde, wearing a succession of skin-tight, don't-mess-with-me outfits by Jennifer Moyer, is a shape-shifting hellhound, all but breathing fire. And then somebody does have, gets credit for pyrotechnics, so that could be interesting. But this looks like definitely something I want to see.
Me too.
Charles Isherwood said, a lively and funny, if sometimes ham-handed, or should I say ham-on-rye-handed, comedy drama. Evidently, there's a lot in here about sandwich names. And then did
they
like
a lot of sandwiches?
They do.
While
did,
the show's going on.
They do. Did they like it? Juan Michael Porter the second said, a gut-busting comedy that leans into sophisticated yet populist perspectives that she invigorated through her previous play. New York Daily News, Chris Jones said, Clyde's is a dark Broadway comedy replete with a terrifyingly funny performance from Uzo Aduba as the titular boss from hell. Tim Tiemann of the Daily Beast said, forget all the big stuff. If you love sandwiches, go see this play. And finally,
it's Robert. It's probably the only time you never want to be called the titular boss from hell.
There you go. And finally, Robert Hoffler from The Wrap said, in a directorial torch that's by far the production's best running gag, Aduba gets more costume changes than Jenna DeWall and Diana, just to bring it full circle.
Oh, that's funny.
So I do have to say this. Three Broadway shows this week. All three.
Very different.
Very different, yes. All three reviewed by Jesse Green. Shame on the New York Times.
Well, I mean, other people could be out right now.
You are so forgiving sometimes, and yet so mercilessly other times.
Well, I work with the media, and there is times when there's one arts writer instead of seven.
Yeah. I have a feeling if they went to Elizabeth Vincentelli and asked her to write a review, she'd say yes. Or one of the up-and-coming black critics on the New York Times staff or freelancers, they would say yes. I just think, you know,
it's a holiday week. It's not unheard of. If you said this to me in February, I'd probably be like, yeah.
Well, my opinion matters because it's how I feel. I think they should have spread the love around a little bit. And I know it's physically possible, holiday or no. Another thing about the Clydes that's interesting is they're going to be streaming this. This is the first Broadway show to stream other than She Loves Me, which I saw. I watched that streaming performance. And I think there was one other that streamed, but I don't remember what it was. So their final 16 performance, they're going to have a limited number of streaming at $59 a ticket, which is the same price as the lowest box office ticket. And there's only going to be a limited number, about 200 or 300 per performance. And they're going to stream it. And I think that's great. You know, I would really love Broadway to learn that streaming will not cannibalize ticket sales. I think we learned that with Hamilton and some of the others. And so hopefully they'll do this more often.
I think they will. They've looked to show that they're doing that. So. Yeah.
Oh, the other one other than She Loves Me was Holiday Inn, which I did not see the streamed version, but I did see the videotaped version.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
So this is a quote from this article, again from the New York Times, written by Michael Paulson. He says, is there a risk that the project will dissuade people from coming to see the show at the theater? I really believe that the magic of being inside the theater and being so close to the stage is not something that goes away. I think that most people are still going to want to go with the in-person experience. And I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Actually, I think it would make you want to go see it live more after seeing it on a stream.
Agreed. They don't look at this as a revenue stream, which I think is important. So they're doing it kind of like they want to.
To me, it's marketing, because that person's going to talk about it to other people, and they're all going to go either, and other people are going to buy the tickets, or that person's going to buy the tickets. It's just marketing. It's brilliant.
Agreed. Let's see. Speaking of streaming, Dear Evan Hansen is not streaming their movie that was just released.
I heard that.
And it is going to be available. I just checked to see it. So it just came out in digital format. So I checked Redbox to see if it was available there yet. It's not. It becomes available on Redbox on December 5th. But I think it's interesting,
can you purchase the DVD?
Yes,
the DVD for sale.
So
it is for sale, and then the red box will be available.
Correct,
will
be later.
On.
Yeah, it became digitally available yesterday, I believe.
And there you go. Yesterday,
all my movies seem so far away. Let's do a little quick time check. It's a 1:24 here in the capital city of Texas. Did you see, and unfortunately when I saved this, it didn't save properly, but Grease, the headline is Grease canceled? And there's evidently a group of people that are protesting Grease for its sexism.
So I think they canceled a show in Australia, a whole bunch of schools ended up canceling shows, and I saw all that going on.
Yeah.
But then isn't it opening in London also?
It is. We're just about to talk about that, but I'm not there yet. I'm still talking about the idea of you know, this is the thing about so this was a play, a musical that opened up in the late 70s about a group of people in the 50s.
Correct, right.
So I don't know. I think
I mean, Olivia Newton-John has spoken out on it because I think this is the second time the whole cancel Grease has come up. I don't know. Okay. I mean, it's Grease.
But you are correct. There's a new production that's going to play in London at the Dominion Theatre starting on May 3rd with an opening night of May 10th. It's directed by Nikolai Foster, choreographed by Arlene Physicals. And they are calling this a grittier version, but that's all they say about it.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. Maybe it's going to have the... You know, the girls and the boys, and there's going to be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then they go at it. What do you think?
Maybe.
Anyway, speaking...
That's okay, because I thought Sharks and Jets, too. I was like, well, do the shows intersect?
That's exactly what I said. We're on...
That's what I thought.
Yep. Speaking of that, I did see the new trailer, finally, today... and it looks lovely, but one of the things that I noticed, so people that know
this...
Are
we talking about West Side Story?
Yes, sorry, West Side Story. People that know this show well know that there are some vast differences between the movie and the musical, and one of them is I Like to Be in America, which in the movie is sort of a battle between the women and the men, and in the play, it's just all the women, they're in different acts. But that's neither here nor there. The movie, they showed a clip from it, so it looks like it's going to be more like the movie version with the men and the women, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. I don't have an opinion.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. We're running out of time, so I'm going to choose one more thing that I want to think. One more thing that I would like to talk about. There was this article about audience etiquette in... from a website called theconversation.com. The article is entitled Theater Audiences, Etiquette and Norms Have Always Shifted with the Times, written by Kelsey Jacobs. And I thought it was very interesting. Did you read this by any chance?
No.
Okay.
But I did see some bad etiquette going on. One of the housewives, Ramona, was awful, which I'm not surprised by her, but she made the Broadway briefing for her awful behavior, and it caused a whole conversation among a group of us.
Okay.
So.
Don't know who she is, but you said she's a housewife, so that's why I don't know who she is, because I don't watch that, but I get it. But first, we're going to start with a quiz. How many years of Western theater history do we have, do you think?
I don't know.
How far back does Western theater history go? I mean, I'd be interesting to find 15, out where they get this.
1600s? I don't
2,500 know. Years. I know. But I find this interesting. They go back to different times. And in the Renaissance England, audiences got very boisterous. Much of the time on purpose. They would urinate, encourage romantic trysts, sleep and eat and drink, all while watching theater. Specifically, you think about the Bard, William Shakespeare. This was doing all this. And as a matter of fact, the groundlings were kind of encouraged. Now, I found this interesting. This I didn't know.
They were encouraged, which makes me just laugh. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
So in the middle of the 18th century, the performer and theater manager David Garrick, he had set out to change his audience behavior. And he tried to get people to behave themselves more. And then he renovated his own theater to move the audience off the stage. Prior to that, audience members sat on the stage. I don't know. Just try to think about this in today's day and age. And then finally,
about
this
people
is
just sitting on the stage.
Yeah, just sitting on the stage, you know, plugging in their cell phones into the prop plug on the stage. And then this is an interesting thing. In the 19th century, when lighting came around, lighting became a dividing factor. And then that's the first time that we used the proscenium arch, which basically builds a wall. It is the fourth wall that we in theater talk about all the time. But prior to the prior to this time, the seating area for the audience would be as brightly lit as the stage, and there was no proscenium arch. I thought that was very interesting. And then fast forward to Patti LuPone and her outbreaks, which we hear about relatively often. And then I think it's interesting. And we're now at a point, I think, where we're relooking at audience etiquette and being a little bit more kinder and gentler about how people react or don't react to the theater.
Or do.
All right. We're going to take a little break and listen to from the wonderful Broadway show, she says tongue-in-cheek, Titanic, the song Autumn. See what I'm doing here?
Is it Titanic Maury Edson?
I believe it is.
Yeah, he wrote 9. I'm not going to make fun of Maury. There was a few songs in Titanic.
I'm not making fun of him. I just didn't like the show.
There's a few songs that were good.
Yeah, you can't like everything. No. So we're going to play a little bit of it, and people can make up their own minds. And then we will come back and hear an interview with me. Stick with us.
Okay.
Autumn, shall we all meet in the autumn?
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Lisa. I want to go for a spin on the Zoom machine, but I see you already pre-programmed some stuff in here because you have somewhere special to take me.
I do. We're off into the land of unexpected joy.
Okay, well, let's buckle up and see who we can find in the world of unexpected joy.
There we go.
Oh my goodness, for reals? In our Zoom machine today, not only do we have the fabulous Lisa Sheps, but we have the one and only Bill Russell here. Hello, Bill Russell.
Hi.
Hello, hello. And we also have Caroline Mullins. Hello, Caroline.
Hi.
Hello. And for listeners, if they don't know, and I think they should because we've talked about you enough on this show, Bill, although we could probably talk more. And we will today. But Bill Russell is Tony nominated master extraordinaire that we know from Sideshow and Pageant and most recently Unexpected Joy, which is so exciting because this show is going to make its regional premiere here at Ground Floor Theater. Yay!
Hey,
so Bill, yay! So Bill, could you tell us a little bit about Unexpected Joy and what this is about?
Sure. It's about a family. The show is performed by four women, and the title character, Joy, is sort of the matriarch. She, for decades, was half of a very successful folk rock duo called Jump and Joy with her common-law husband, with her partner. They never got married, but her partner was named Jump, a nicknamed Jump. And he has died a year before the events of the show. And she's a real kind of hippie, little spacey, just hasn't gotten around to doing a memorial service for him, but finally has gotten it together. It's going to be a memorial concert to which she has invited her daughter and granddaughter. And her daughter rejected her parents' hippie bohemian musician lifestyle and married a seminary student who became a very successful televangelist in Oklahoma. Joy lives and has lived for a long time on Cape Cod, near Provincetown in Truro. And it's been a difficult relationship between mother and daughter, but she agrees to come for her father's memorial service and bring her daughter, Tamara, who has just graduated from high school. Rachel is also a musician. She's a singer, and she performs regularly on her husband's televangelist show. Tammy, the granddaughter, has her own aspirations, musical aspirations, which she does not share with her parents because she knows they would not approve. She's a kind of, she writes and has actually secretly been performing these kind of hard rock songs that are not her parents' lifestyle at all. Joy, what she hasn't told either of them is that because all of these people are coming for this memorial service, the next day she is planning to marry her new girlfriend, who is also a singer, a blues singer, an out lesbian. And when this secret comes out,
A lot goes down
because Rachel has a bone to pick about her parents never being married. That's part of what the split is about, that her husband does not feel it's a good image for them to have for his mother-in-law to have never been married. So the fact that she's now going to marry a woman is pretty major.
Exciting. And Caroline, you play the granddaughter, correct?
I do.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about this experience, a little bit about your character and what you have found?
Gosh, this has just been such an incredible experience. I loved getting to know the character, Tamara, and getting to learn the story and just more about her. She's a really fun character to play, sort of rebellious, but has a lot of love for her grandmother especially, and has aspirations to be a singer, and just big dreams, and it's been so fun getting to explore this.
Well, that's really exciting. Now, Lisa Sheps, people know you as the co-host here. They know you as the ground floor lady. They know your stuff. You are directing this said piece. How has this been for you? And I have to ask, how has it been for you also not just directing this piece, but being in close contact with a creator? Because that is different than normally just like, I'm going to do a play. I'm going to do a musical. So tell us a little bit about that experience. And then Bill, you can tell us all about Lisa too.
Absolutely. I've had so much fun putting this together so far. We're still, we're still a couple of weeks out and we're still working. First of all, I need to mention the incredible cast that we have. Kathy Sheridan is playing Joy. She's amazing. The incomparable Amber Quick as Rachel. And I can't say enough about Michelle Alexander as Lou. It's really fun. This is a very female-centric piece for us, is the way we are looking at this. Our band is all female. Everybody is female, with the exception of just a couple people. The entire creative team is all female. So we're very, very happy about that. I've had a lot of fun working with these people, exploring characters. We look at this piece and on the surface, as we talk about the stuff that Ground Floor Theater does, this is slightly lighter fare on the surface, but when you really dig down deep, there is so much going on here. And these characters are so complex, and the relationships ebb and flow and finding their place. We've had such a tremendous journey as we've gone through and explored these relationships and these characters. And I think people will be very, very happy with what we see. As we're exploring the piece, it's half concert, half show, if you will. And we have this beautiful set designed by Gary Thornsberry that marries that concert stage and that living room, if you will, together in a very kind of retro style that we just love. So bottom line is, we think we're going to have a really good time here. And with regards to working with the incomparable Bill Russell as we go through this, it's very nerve-wracking because he's such a genius. But Bill has been great so far. And, every time I've gone to him to talk about things that we want to go through, he's been very thoughtful and we discuss things. And I know it's great. And I think that it's not a secret. Well, not a secret, but you're coming in down for this, aren't you, Bill?
Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to it.
So that's exciting.
I haven't seen a show of mine on stage for a while, thanks to the pandemic.
I was just about to ask now, when is the last time you saw one of your shows on a stage?
Whoa. Well, Unexpected Joy opened in New York and London in 2018. The London production in the fall of 2018 was the last time I saw this show on a stage. It was then acquired for publication and licensing by Samuel French. And then Samuel French was acquired by Concord Theatricals, which is a huge conglomerate. And all of that, you know, took a while. And then by the time it was published and licensed, the pandemic hit. So this is the first production since London, and I'm thrilled to see it.
And we're so excited to be doing it. Yes. And so to say that it's a little nerve-wracking having you come, but it is, but we don't care. We think you're going to love it. We know you're going to fall in love with our performers.
Oh, no, I'm thrilled you're doing it. So don't be nervous.
I'm never nervous.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa. Do I still have more time to talk, or are we out of
time? We have a little bit more time. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
Okay, well, I didn't know. Sometimes we talk so much that we get ourselves in trouble editing later. I just wanted to make sure we weren't in a trouble train. So I want to ask a little bit more about how long is this show? And you were mentioning, I know you have musicians, and I know it's set up like a living room. But how many musicians are there, and are they basically on stage during the whole performance?
Yeah, so we have four musicians, piano, bass, drums, guitar, and they are on stage at all times. And we like to think the musicians as part of the cast, so there's a little bit of banter with them so that they are part, and we're having a lot of fun as we do them. To be quite honest, we have not seen all the musicians yet. We're having our sits probe, which is the first time the actors work with a full band, on Monday. And so we will meet all of those band members on Monday. And I know that we hear that they're very excited. We are going to give them some of them. We have some costume changes for them. And that's going to be kind of fun. So we're really, really looking forward to it. And when you bring a band in, when you've been rehearsing with piano, I don't think I have to tell any of the people here on the Zoom what a difference it makes when you bring all that texture of all the different musical instruments into the room with you. And it's going to change everything.
And I think in this show particularly, the band is really crucial because each of the characters is a singer, and the score is pop, rock, blues, jazz. And even when we did readings, just in a room, we always had a band because I thought it was so, a piano just doesn't capture what the sound should feel like. I mean, this music, Janet's music, is just so great. And it has a real groove to it. So, you know, if you try to do it with just piano, you can't quite get that, I think. So I'm glad you're having
one. Of course. And I guess we should say, by Janet, you mean Janet Hood, who is the music writer.
The composer, yeah.
Yeah. Am I allowed to ask a question, Nicole?
Yes, you are. Okay. You are. Please do.
I do. I want to ask a question.
I have a feeling you might be asking what I was going to, but let's see. Sometimes we play this game well.
I just want to ask Caroline a question because, yeah. Caroline, you are the youngest member of the cast. And so this is a style of music that isn't what you typically listen to, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, how do you feel singing this music and working with this music and what that brings up for you?
God, it's been so much fun. This, yeah, like, isn't really the kind of music I typically listen to. I'm a big musical theater kid. It's mainly show tunes, you know, some pop, Ariana Grande, but this style has been so much fun to learn. And gosh, my favorite part of this music is just the beautiful harmonies between the the four women and getting to learn those four part harmonies and sing with my castmates. It is just so beautiful and so much fun making music together. I was in an a cappella group for all of high school, and it just takes me right back to singing a cappella with those girls and singing harmonies. And just, I love the music in this show so much.
And your first song is pretty hard rocking.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Now, Billy, I have a question. When you're writing with Janet, and or specifically when you're writing this piece with Janet, and you have lyrics and she's music and you're putting it together, I mean, do you go and kind of already have a feeling when you go in, or does she, how does that process work?
Well, with us, we've been writing together for almost 50 years now. We met when we were in college, and our first musical, she was at Oberlin and I was at KU, and we wrote the whole show by mail. And that has been our modus operandi ever since. Now it's email, and you know, she used to send me that first musical, she sent me these reel-to-reel tapes. But she has always preferred working from the lyric, which is true of most of the composers I work with, but not true of the world of musical theater generally. So typically I write a lyric, maybe not a whole lyric. I send it to her, she'll set it, and then we refine it back and forth.
That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
We don't always get to ask that question on here. So that was a good one for listeners.
Everyone has a different process. And I mean, I was telling Stephen Schwartz, who wrote Wicked and Godspell and Pippin, about that. And he said, well, that's just wrong. And well, maybe wrong, but that's how we work, you know.
Oh, well, this is so wonderful. Thank you all for joining us. Lisa, I'm so excited you pre-programmed things in the Zoom room so that we could take a little trip to Unexpected Joy being done at Ground Floor Theater and have Bill Russell and Caroline Mullins on the show along with you. You got to be interviewed today. So exciting.
That's true. I had to behave myself.
Well, I think it was awesome, Sauce. So thank you, everyone.
Unexpected Joy opens December 3rd and plays through the 19th. For more information, you may visit groundfloortheater.org.
Unexpected Joy, Joy, Unexpected Joy.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and who?
Nicole
the First. Well, that was
Unexpected Joy.
Joy. That music was from the Off-Broadway production, and so you get a little feel of what it's going to sound like. It's actually really fun.
And you know what? That was a really great choice of music too, because knowing the women that are cast in the show, you really can hear them singing those tunes and be like, oh, I know what that's going to sound like, and that's delightful.
True, true. So I just want to highlight very quickly one other local thing that's happening, also starting on December 2nd, Iphigenius at Alls, I don't know how it's pronounced, but it's Austin Community College Drama Department. They're going to do a digital production in their digital green room on their YouTube channel. And it is directed by Simone Alexander, who runs New Manifest Theater and works at Ground Floor Theater. It premieres December 2nd at 8 o'clock. And it's available till the 12th of December. And you can get more information by going to atxtheater.org and looking at the listings. And you'll see it right there. I'll also do another little plug for who we're going to be talking to next week, which I'm very excited about, and I forgot her name and I didn't write it down. She is from Austin, Texas. She is a swing at a show called Hamilton, which will be
Alana,
right? Yes. I couldn't remember her last name or her first name for that matter, but it's coming. And I sadly had to turn down my tickets to Hamilton, so I won't get to see it this go round. But I did, and I meant to mention this before. I will be, there is a Hamilton lottery here in Austin for very, very low cost tickets. And you can get the app on the App Store or Google Play. And then you can get daily, every day that they're playing here, and I believe they're here for 2 weeks, lottery and try to get
into the little lottery.
Yeah. So I know I have it on my phone and I'm going to be lotterizing every day because
you did last time too, didn't you?
I did, but I didn't get anything. But yeah, very, are you going to go see it this time?
I was not going to go see it this time. I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind. What do you know?
Well, I'm not either. I just couldn't do it because we have a show that night and it happens to be one of our streaming shows and I've got to be there for the streaming shows.
Yes, I did. I did owe someone a very giant thank you for a lot of work and help they gave me legally. So I did purchase a pair of tickets as a thank you.
Oh, look at you.
For the tour in Houston.
Oh,
for
good
someone
for you.
Who's been really dying to go see the show and has never seen it. And
wonderful. Well, good. You're supporting the arts. Hey, let's
that
do.
That was my best way I thought I could give back.
There
I
you go.
Like, hey, now.
What do you say we do a little Today in Theater History?
Today
in theater history,
stuff happened and Lisa will tell us.
Hip hip hooray. So
tell us, Lisa.
So this is the birthday of Frances Hodgson Burnett. She was born in 1849.
Get out. Did she hear someone crying? Who now could it be? She's the Secret Garden lady, right?
Yes, okay, yeah. I don't know the music well enough or Secret Garden to get that.
Crying.
Well, so
yeah,
there,
okay. There you go.
That's true. I'm just amazed at how well you know. I wouldn't have known that without having read it. In 1924, it was the opening night of Sidney Howard's drama, They Knew What They Wanted.
But did they really know?
I don't know. They say they did.
I don't either.
It's about an elderly wine grower who tries to fool a mail-order bride by sending her the photo of this handsome young foreman. That never happens in real life today, does it?
Oh, my goodness. They were catfishing in 1924 without the internet.
They were catfishing. It won the Pulitzer Prize, and it's adapted into a musical, which has
what a strange musical.
Oh, hold on. I lost my headphones, so I can't hear you.
What a strange musical, strange concept for a musical. Well, but, you know, then there is Diana, so.
So the musical goes by a different name, and I believe it takes place in Dallas, but there, if it doesn't take place in Dallas, there's a song about Dallas that goes, Big D, my, oh yes, Big D, double L-A-L-A-S, which is the most happy fella.
Oh, yes, you are correct. Interesting.
Today is the birthday of the director, Martin Charnin, who's also a lyricist and an actor. He worked with Richard Rodgers on 2x2 and I Remember Mama.
He's one of those people that just didn't, you know, get off his hiney and do enough.
Yeah, he did Annie, which is going to be opening here in on TV soon.
The TV.
And he began his career, because we just keep going around and around in circles, he was a jet in West Side Story.
Oh, boy, it really just does all come back to West Side Story in many different ways.
It does. Okay, we got to zip faster. I'm going to skip some of these. Guys and Dolls opened in 1950, directed by George F. Kaufman. Michael Kidd choreographed it. And so this is a... Abe Burrows, Joe Swerling, and Ron Lesser. And he had people like Sam Levine as Nathan Detroit, Robert Alda, who's the father of Alan Alda.
Oh.
Stubby K was in it. So in 1951, Audrey Hepburn starred in a show called Anita Loose, which is an adaptation of Gigi. The completely wrong musical.
Yeah.
1986, Smile opened, about a backstage beauty pageant.
Why does that sound like absolutely hilarious?
I don't know. 2011, West End, the West End transfer of the Royal Shakespeare's company of Matilda the Musical.
Yeah.
One of your favorites. The Tim Minchin.
They have those revolting children. I do adore them.
They do. It opened, West End transfer that... Oh, it transferred to West End. It opened on Broadway in 2013, 2 years later.
Yes, that's when I saw it.
Yep, and this is the death anniversary of Florence Henderson.
Oh, well, that just made me sad.
Yeah.
So, you really brought it down.
So that is true. So you've done it. What's this?
At Wanamaker's and Saxon.
I meant to have that underneath our talking.
I was like, I don't know, but I love that you got us some like music while we're staying.
We're going to have some underscoring here while we wrap up. You've spent an hour with Lisa and Nicole here on KOOP, and we talked theater, which is what we do every week.
That's what's happening. Go to offstageonair.com, check out more.
Yep. And I want to say that I am thankful for everyone who's listening. And Nicole, I am thankful for you.
I am thankful for you too, Miss Lisa Schaft. I adore you.
I adore you right back. So we are looking forward to finishing off this holiday season. And before we know it, it's going to be 2022 and we'll be off to the races for the next thing. You can't wait? You're looking forward to 2022?
Oh, I so am. I was looking forward to 2022 back in 2020.
I think most of us in 2020 were looking forward to anything that wasn't 2020.
No, I knew 2021 was just not going to be any better. I am so excited. I can't wait.
Well, good. I hope you are right. I was one of those naive people that thought on January 1st, 2021, everything would be better. But,
yeah, no, I'm waiting. But 2022, okay, but see you.
Thank you for joining us. Texas Music Mixtape is next with DJ Mark. I see him coming into the studio even as we speak. I know he's got a wonderful show for you guys with all that Texas turkey music out there. And we will see you next week when Nicole and I does what?
See what's happening off stage and on the air.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. The man today and train him subsequently.